Thank you so much for joining us for SPIRIT, the stimulating program initiative for retirees that inspires thought. I'm Judy Steinig, Director of Community Programs for the Orthodox Union, and it's my honor to coordinate and host this program. The OU created SPIRIT several years ago as an on-site program, and now we are happy to present it as a virtual program for baby boomers, active retirees, not yet retirees, empty nesters, sandwich generation, parents, and seniors, all of whom are looking for opportunities for spiritual, educational, and intellectual growth. Since everyone is still all sheltering in because of the pandemic, SPIRIT has become the perfect way for all of us to engage in an online setting. Today is a very sad day in the Jewish calendar, Shavuot B'Tammuz, the 17th day of Tammuz, which is a fast day commemorating the breach of the walls of Yerushalayim and starts the three-week period of mourning, which ended in the destruction of the temples on Tisha B'Av. We are very privileged to have as our guest speaker someone who needs no introduction to all of us spirit viewers. I am sure that many of us will be spending our Tisha B'Av virtually with him. I know that I always do. Rabbi Stephen Weil, Senior Managing Director of the OU, will be speaking to us today on King Hosea, the one man who could have prevented the destruction. Thank you so much, Rabbi Weil. It's my honor to turn the program over to you.
I want to thank Rebbitz and Judy Steinig, you know, who not only is one of the all-star players at the OU, a good friend of all of us, and someone who's mentored many shuls, many congregations and rabbis over the course of the last couple of decades. And it's an honor to participate in this program. I want to wish everyone a meaningful fast and a meaningful day. Today, when I was speaking with Rebbitz and Steinig, we thought we would take one of the more interesting personalities in Jewish history and really one of the more lesser known personalities in Jewish history. There's twice a year that you and I study this person. The first time, sometimes we may not even be aware of it because we're a little bit filled up from two Siddurim, but it's this, the Haftorah of the second day of Pesach. That's one story and analysis of this person. Very positive, very, very upbeat. And we'll speak about that. And the second time we study him is on Tisha B'Av. It's the 11th Kina, which in a few minutes from now, we're actually going to put up on the screen. And it's his story and the tragic ending of his story. Believe it or not, the Kalir, the great author of the Kinos, Rabbi Elazar HaKalir, he lived in Israel. He was a contemporary of the Gaonim. Most world Jewry at that time was living somewhere along the Euphrates River, some on the Tigris River, communities like Baghdad, Pumpadisa, Sura, all the communities that we're familiar with. But there was a minority community that lived, some in Yerushalayim, primarily most of them lived in northern Israel. Of Jews, maybe 8-10% of world Jewry that still stayed in Israel. And he was a mentor to that community. Our Rosh Hashanah davening wouldn't be what it is without him. The theory is that they kept one day Rosh Hashanah there because we have piyutim of his for Yom Kippur. We have piyutim of his for the first day Rosh Hashanah, but not for the second day Rosh Hashanah. And as well, our Tisha B'Av would not be Tisha B'Av without him. He really is the one that takes us by the hand, and we experience Tisha B'Av because of him. Who is this Rabbi Elazar Kalir? Someone who shaped our whole relationship with God, not just the Yamim Noraim, not just Tisha B'Av, but those who say the Piyutim on the special Shabbatot, the special Shabbosim, you know, the 4 weeks, of those who say Piyutim on Pesach. It's all the words of the Kalir. Here's where we want to start. What the Kalir taught us, and he didn't create this, this is something that he learned from others, particularly from Rabbi Akiva, that very often you and I get lost when we talk about huge numbers. No one can fathom 6 million. You just can't fathom such a thing. But you know what we can fathom? The story of one person. I mean, look at in America, the impact, and it was a movie, but the impact that Steven Spielberg had was Schindler's List. Or look at the impact, the Diary of Anne Frank. Now, Anne Frank, in terms of the totality of the Churban of the Shoah, is very insignificant. But her story enables us to relate to a young adolescent girl and her family. And from there, we can start to appreciate. And the same was true with the story of Stern, the one who was the manager for Oskar Schindler's factory in Plaszów. That's this kina, the 11th kina, and that's the story of Yoshiyahu HaMelech. Till this day, many religious Protestants, Lutherans, many evangelicals, they name their baby boys Josiah or Josie. Many of you remember the famous movie, The Western, with Clint Eastwood and Eli Wallach and Lee Van Cleef. The outlaw Josie Wales. Who's Josie Wales? Josie is from the word Josiah, or in Hebrew, Yoshiyahu. Who was Yoshiyahu? He was probably the second last righteous Jewish king we had. Now, keep in mind, his great-grandfather, Hezekiah Chizkiyahu, was an incredible Jewish leader. Could have been potentially the Mashiach. His great ancestors, Asa, Yehoshaphat, King David, David HaMelech, Shlomo HaMelech, King Solomon, these were great, great leaders. But as time went on, many of their descendants did not live up to the responsibilities and the values of what it means to be the leader of the Jewish people. When we say a melech, we mean the executive, the one who's going to implement the values of the Sanhedrin, the one who's going to facilitate the Kohanim can educate the people, the one who's going to create a just moral society and set up a system where economically the Jewish people can thrive, not to mention is going to oversee a military that will protect the Jewish people if they do God's bidding. So he is the king that follows two people. Number one, his grandfather Menashe, 55 years. The longest, they talk about Bibi Netanyahu, who will go down in Israelis' history as probably the longest serving prime minister. He's even outlasted in terms of his number of days as prime minister, David Ben-Gurion. But Bibi's 12 years as prime minister do not compare to the 55 years of Menashe. And it was a terrible period, followed by Menashe's son Amon for 6 or 7 years. And it's in that context that Yoshiyahu is the next Jewish king. Following 6 decades of corruption, 6 decades of corruption. Think about in America today, we have Iranian Jews who have moved here after the downfall of the Shah in the late 70s. Those Jews function very well as Jews. They built a wonderful Jewish community because in Iran, there was a traditional Jewish community. There were Jewish values, there were Jewish principles. So they transferred that here. But what about the immigration of Jews from the former Soviet Union? Not the Jews from Tashkent and Uzbekistan who had religious freedom, those Sephardic Jews who lived as Jews. I'm talking about the ones who were under the tyranny and the oppression of communism. The Jews from the Ukraine, the Jews from Georgia, the Jews from what we call today Russia, the Jews that lived in Lithuania, that didn't have the luxury of religious freedom. When those Jews who were raised on mocking religion, mocking God, science is the religion, okay? The party is the religion. Those are fairy tales from the Bible. Only idiots and fools believe in these fairy tales. Where's God? You can't point to him. You can't prove him empirically. So they were raised in 7 generations of communism. It was not easy for many of these Jews when they came to Israel or when they came to America to now all of a sudden lead a ethical monotheistic lifestyle, to lead a lifestyle where they're committed to Jewish values. You can't uproot 7 decades, which are 3 generations of communism. It doesn't happen quickly. And a lot of those Jews were lost when they came here. And we were not very successful in bringing them into our community. We weren't successful in integrating into our value system. That's what Yoshiyahu was dealing with. Yoshiyahu is a young man. We're going to take a look in just a minute at the text. But he becomes the king at a very, very young age. And when you're young, you see the world in black and white. All categories are clear. Things are not gray. The older we get, the more sophisticated we get, the more nuanced we get, we see things in a more gray tone. But Yoshiyahu he realized he rejected the lifestyle of his father and his grandfather. And he realized that he's the scion of David HaMelech, of King David. He's the scion of King Solomon, of Yehoshaphat and Asa and Hezekiah, his great-grandfather. And he's got a responsibility. And his grandfather, Menashe, who had eradicated all Jewish texts, it was hard to find a Sefer Torah. But the Kohanim had hid a Sefer Torah in the Heichal, in the innermost part of the Beis HaMikdash. And they found it. And they brought it to this young king. And it was the Kohanim who mentored him. And what was the Torah open to? And they describe what a Torah is. They describe what the values of the Torah are, and that his responsibility is to lead the Torah, lead the Jewish nation, following those values. The Torah was open to an interesting phrase. It's the section in Parshas Kisavo. We read it 2 weeks before Rosh Hashanah. That section talks about the covenant that the new Jewish community, the covenant that the Jews who have entered the land of Israel under Yoshua make. It's like a reenactment of the Mount Sinai experience that their progenitors made, that their parents and grandparents made 40 years earlier. They're going to reenact that in Israel itself. Where? In Shechem. They're in the valley in Shechem, and these two massive mountains, and many of you have been there, they overlook Shechem. One is Har Eval, Mount Eval, which today is a military installation. You can see, you know, they have radar that goes as far east as Iraq. And the other is Har Gerizim, Mount Gerizim. What happened? They had a covenant. And they said, Baruch, blessed is the person that observes the following. And Arur, and cursed is the person that does not. And what's the very last one? It says, Arur Asher Lo Yakim is called Divrei HaTorah Zos. Yakim is the hefil, the causative. Cursed is the one who does not facilitate, who does not cause or allow the fulfillment of the words of the Torah. What's that referring to? The leadership of the Jewish people. The Ramban on that verse in Kisavo describes it's referring to the Melech, the executive, because he's the one who has to set up a judiciary. He's the one that's got to set up a health system. He's the one that's got to maintain a functioning society where people can do commerce in a healthy, clean, honest way. And there are consequences to those who manipulate, who cheat. What happened? They said, young man, this is you. You're in that unique position. You're the only Jew on earth that has the ability to fulfill this. And he took that challenge. He took that charge from the Kohanim very seriously. And as we know from the Haftorah that we read on the second day of Pesach, slowly but surely, he started to eradicate. And I would say not so slowly, fastly but surely, he started to eradicate idols, altars, places of worship, tore them down. The Kohanim who had engaged in Avodah Zarah didn't allow them to serve in the Beis HaMikdash. These private altars, he started to remove them, because the private altars, that's the beginning of the slippery slope. Once you do not have a system that's legislated and that's, so to speak, observed, when everyone can start doing whatever the heck they want, they engage in all kinds of crazy things and all kinds of preposterous activities that we refer to as avodah zarah, as idolatry. He eradicated the private altars. He started setting up serious courts. You know what he did with the tax dollars? They paved the highways. He appointed a new Department of Transportation so that wherever you were in Israel, you could do what? You could get to Jerusalem. And for the first time in decades, you started having masses of people come for the holidays, bring the Korban Pesach, become one people, one nation, become educated together on the holidays. All of these things were rapidly changing. And he was doing a tremendous job, Yoshiyahu HaMelech, King Josiah. An incredible, incredible job he was doing. He was the great hope for the Jewish people. The Jewish people that had been on a slippery slope going down, 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 down for, like we said, 62 years, six decades. This young man is turning it around. Now you can imagine there's a lot of animosity. You can imagine there's a tremendous amount of apprehension, because there are people who don't like changing the status quo. There are people who had a lot to gain under the old system, and now they're on the outs. But he kept moving forward. And it's a great revival. Great revival. This is the context of our kina. Revitson Steinig, could you please put up the text? We'll put up the first half and then we'll go to the second half. So we're about to put up the text. If you take a look, I'm going to read part of it in Hebrew. Feel free for those who want to look at it in English, but we're going to stop and explain some of it. Vayikonen Yirmiyahu al Yoshiyahu. This was a kina. This is a lamentation. This is actually the eulogy that Jeremiah the prophet gave to Yoshiyahu. So we'll see why he died and what the reason for the eulogy was in a few minutes. But let's describe him. Eicha, Eli, Konenu Me'elav, the greats, the Elim, everyone acknowledged the loss of this man. Who was he? Ben Shmona Shana Hechel Yidrosh Me'elav. At 8 years old, he was an inquisitive young man, and he started to question and challenge his parents, his father's ways. He started to seek out God. But tragically, Bnei Cham, the descendants of Cham, who is Cham? His descendants settled Africa. And in North Africa, it was his son Mitzrayim, which created the great empire that we refer to as Egypt. Be'avram Chanu Alav, when they passed through, they encamped against him. V'lo huzkar lo sigoy mifalav. And the great deeds of Yoshiyahu were not enough on his behalf to enable him to survive or the Jewish people. Let's stop for a second. As you know, Israel is referred to by the Latin term, the Via Maris. What's the Via Maris? By way of the sea. Anyone who wants to travel between the African continent and Europe or Asia, if you're coming from Asia or Europe and you want to go to Africa, if you're coming from Africa and you want to go to Europe or Asia, the only way you can do that is through Israel. Israel is the linchpin of the three continents. That's why it is such a crucial geographic location. And if you're an individual, you could travel like Avraham Avinu or Yaakov Avinu did. Those small little crevices and cracks that go through the mountains, because as you know, Israel's primarily a mountainous. Think about landing in Ben Gurion Airport. And then you're either now you can take the train, but until now you would take what? You take an automobile, take a bus, and you're going up the mountain to Yerushalayim, and your ear is cracking and popping, whether you take the 443 or the Highway 1. Well, that's the nature of the country. You've got the flatlands along the Mediterranean coast. You've got Derech HaMelech, the flatland known as the Jordan Valley, Bikat Yarden, which is in the news every day today. But between the Jordan Valley and between the Mediterranean, it's all mountains. There's one little crevice in those mountains that you can get from Hebron to Beit Lechem to Yerushalayim through the tribe of Benjamin to Beit El up to Shechem. Today, in modern times, we've built Highway 60 on that little crevice. So if you're Avraham or Yaakov, you can go through that crevice. But if you're a whole army, you're a military with chariots and horses and provisions and armaments, you can't use Highway 60. It's too small, too narrow. You have to travel along the Mediterranean coast. You go north from Egypt, through the Gaza Strip, north through Ashkelon, through Ashdod, through Tel Aviv, through Netanya, until you get to a place called the Megiddo Junction. Now, if any of you have been there, the Megiddo Junction is famous. Why is the Megiddo Junction famous? That is the Via Maris. You took the Mediterranean to that point, now you make a right-hand turn. You cut through on the right-hand turn, you cut through the one flat area in northern Israel known as Emek Yisrael, the Jezreel Valley. That's where Moshe Dayan grew up, right? You cut right through the Jezreel Valley on your way into Mesopotamia. And you go through Jordan and through Syria into Iraq. That is how, if someone was going to battle, either coming from Asia, the Persian Gulf, or Europe, going into Africa, or coming from Africa, going into the Persian Gulf, or going into the Fertile Crescent. Okay? That being the case, what happened? We'll see that Yoshiyahu, the Melech, King Josiah, he took his troops and he said, we're going to stop the Pharaoh who's trying to go through our land to get into Mesopotamia to fight Assyria. We're going to stop him at Megiddo Junction. And in fact, if you were to go to Megiddo Junction today, there's an incredible archaeological site there. You know what's in the archaeological site? Thousands of stanchions of horses. Now, why in the world would they have thousands of stanchions? Stanchions are the stables that you keep the horses in. They had horse barns. You know why? Because the horse was the tank. The horse was the Humvee. That was the military implement. And if you want to, you know, that's why you keep your military. It's the armory of the Jewish army. Well, what happened? Paro. Pharaoh is a generic term for the emperor of Egypt. This particular pharaoh, his name was Paro Necho. He sent a message to Yoshiyahu. And he says to Yoshiyahu, listen, I don't have a quarrel with you, but we're going to be traveling through your land. We're going to war. There were two great empires at that time. Mitzrayim, the great African empire. Ashur, the great Mesopotamian Empire, which controlled Syria, Turkey, Iraq, and those two empires are going to battle. Well, little Israel, which is in the middle, and it was called Yehuda, Judea, they don't have the luxury, felt Yoshiyahu, of what? Of maintaining, of taking sides. We have to maintain our neutrality. We don't have the luxury of maintaining, of taking one side or the other. And if we allow Paro Necho and the Egyptian military to traverse Israel using the Via Maris, that's going to be perceived by Ashur, which we think is a much stronger country, that's going to be perceived as an act of war. That's going to be perceived as an act of aggression. And he therefore says to Paro Necho, I will not allow it. You can't do that. I will not tolerate that. The prophet at this point is Yirmiyahu, Jeremiah. It's the beginning of the period of Yirmiyahu's prophecy. Yoshiyahu, King Josiah, is no longer a young kid. He's already an established monarch, an established executive. And Yirmiyahu begs him and pleads with him not to take the Jewish soldiers, not to take the troops, and not to engage in an attack or a military conflagration between Mitzrayim and the Jewish army. Yoshiyahu says, listen, you know, you want to, hey, Jeremiah, you want to give a drasha and shul, you want to give the sermon, you want to teach a shir, very nice. A politician, you're not. You know, as Clint Eastwood would always say, a man's got to know his limitations. What are you getting involved in politics for? It's not your place. It's not where you belong. Now, this was a terrible, terrible mistake. Because, of course, Yirmiyahu, Jeremiah would never get involved in politics if it wasn't coming from God. If it wasn't coming from the Almighty, he would have never gotten involved in this. And Yoshiyahu doesn't listen. And this is the great, great tragedy. Because this is the one man, and we'll talk about the aftermath of Yoshiyahu. This is the one person, as the leader of the Jewish people, who could have prevented the Churban Beis HaMikdash. Let's read inside. Gimel. Gam b'chol ha'mlachim asher kamu lidor. Amongst all the Jewish kings and Jewish leaders who stood up, you tried, attempted to establish a halachic government, an ethical monotheistic theocracy. Lo kam kamahu mimos avigdor. No one compared to Yoshiyahu from the time of Avigdor. You know who Avigdor is? That's Moshe Rabbeinu. His mother and father named him Avigdor. Why do we call him Moshe? We, the Jewish people, have this eternal historical gratitude to his stepmother, to the Egyptian royal princess who took him out of the Nile and raised him. So she named him Musa, Moshe. Ki min hamayim mishisi, the one that I've drawn out of the water. So in our gratitude to Bitya, to the Egyptian royal princess, her name was Bitya. We call her Bitya, meaning the daughter of God. So we express our gratitude and we call him Moshe. But his name was Avigdor. What does the Kalir mean? The author of this kina, what does he mean? That from the time of Avigdor, you never had a leader like Yoshiyahu. Lo kam kamahu mimos Avigdor. What he means to say is this. Yes, there were great leaders, maybe greater leaders than Yoshiyahu. There was a King David, there was a Shmuel Hanavi, there was a King Solomon. But you know what the difference is? They were starting at level 8, and they took the nation from 8 to 10. What did Moshe Rabbeinu do? He was starting at 0. It was a group of illiterate pagan slaves. And he had to take them and build them up and mentor them to become the people of the book, to become the people of wisdom. That's what Yoshiyahu had. He was starting with 62 years of paganism, of corruption, of a lack of a judiciary. And he had to turn around a society, change the educational system. No one was starting that low and took them so far since the time of who? Since the time of Moshe Rabbeinu. But tragically, the Dalid, Davakbo Avon Leitzanei Hador. You know what caused his downfall? The sin of the mockers of the generation. Asher Achar Hadelas Kamulistor. They were behind the door. Meaning what? When the police, the religious police that Yoshiyahu established, would come into people's house and look for, they were checking for idols. And they were making sure that people didn't have these idols amongst themselves. Well, what happened? They would open up the door. When they opened the door, the back of the door, which could not be seen because it's up against the wall, that's where the idols were. And they hid them that way. Those who consumed the produce of the Nile, meaning the Egyptians, they took his beautiful, beautiful golden face, that image, you know, and they blackened it. Meaning what? They caused his death, as we'll see. I'm going to do the following. I'm going to skip a little bit. Look to Tess. Let's go down to Tess. Tovim, meaning, so to speak, our friends, the ones that we had a pact with, you know, our good friends. Let me just make sure, where is it? Yeah, the Egyptians who, so to speak, were our Reim, you know, supposedly our peers. They said, Mali Valachayon. Listen, I got nothing against you, but get the heck out of my way. Don't get in our way because we're coming through. And that all tragically caused the downfall of the Jewish people. Yidei Am Haaretz, Damim B'Malach Te'anish, B'Vitzi Es Penei Mepilach. What happened? Look at the Chaf. Ki Laha Monai. God says, my masses, meaning hundreds and hundreds of Jewish soldiers, were consumed, were wiped out. Laleches Aram Narayim. As the Egyptian military was on its way, traveling through the Via Maris, on its way to Aram Naharayim, meaning to Mesopotamia. Here's the key line, the Lamed, Leman lo sa'avor cherev kol shehu be'Ephraim. What's the story? The story is this. In the Tochacha, which you can find in Parshas Kisavo, there's a covenant that's made that if the Jewish people lead a life in line with our nature, and we play our role as educators in creating a society that is a role model to the family of nations, then God will facilitate us playing that role. How will God facilitate that? Many ways. Number one is there'll be a good economy. Rain will come in its proper time. There'll be no shortage of food. Number two is there'll be peace in the land. There'll be prosperity in the land. And after saying that there will be shalom ba'aretz, the Parshas Kisavo, it's right there at the beginning of the Tochacha, it says, v'cherev lo sa'avor ba'artzachem, nor will the sword traverse or pass through your land. Well, what's that referring to? You just said, Rashi asked this question. You just said that if the Jewish people lead a life in line with our nature, we'll have peace. Not only will we have peace, okay? Not only will we have peace, but afilu cherev shel shalom, Rashi explains. But even the sword of peace will not travel through our land. Meaning what? Imagine those of you who live in Detroit. If the Canadian military comes through the Windsor Tunnel, you know, on its way to Mexico, and you hear those massive diesel engines, and then you see the boot trampling of thousands of soldiers with militia armed. You don't want that. So the point is, Yoshiyahu felt that the Jewish people were on such a level, that there had been such a transformation, that we were worthy not only of peace, but we were worthy of a higher level of peace, that even cherev lo sa'avor ba'artzachem, the sword will not traverse your land. That's what he assumed, okay? And Jeremiah said to him, the prophet came and said, King Yoshiyahu, I don't want to burst your bubble. We said, lo kam mimosa vidor kamahu. No one, we've never had someone turn around the Jewish people the way you have. But that's not kid yourself. You know that those of you from Brooklyn who live in Florida or other parts or in Arizona, the famous phrase, you can take the boy out of Brooklyn, but you can't take Brooklyn out of the boy. Well, we can take down the idols. We can take down the altars. We can fix the highways and get people to show up in Yerushalayim for the holidays. We can do a lot of things, but it takes time for people to change. People are not, they can't change on a dime. When people have attitudes and values, it sometimes takes a generation or two or three to change them. In Yoshiyahu, you're making a mistake if you don't realize that the people are not exactly where you think they are. Achar hadeles listor, after that closed door, behind that locked door, you better believe the idol's up. And it says, Lo shama lachoze. He didn't listen to the visionary, meaning he didn't listen to the prophet. We refer to our prophets as like Chazon Yishayahu. We're going to read a Haftorah in a couple of weeks, right? The vision of Isaiah. So he didn't listen to Jeremiah. Lashuv acharayim, to back down, to retreat from the battle at Megiddo. Please go to the next page. And as we said, top line, mechatot stirat mezuzot, from the sin of that which was concealed behind the doorpost, meaning what? You know, in public, I may not defy things because I'll get caught. But at night, when my door is locked, you don't know what's happening in my house. From that sin, the sins that were behind the sealed doors, chazon antoti hechelu levazos. The vision of the man from Anatot. Jeremiah, as you know, lived in Anatot. Today, Anatot is the northern suburb of Yerushalayim that we call French Hill. That's Anatot. But at that time, it was a suburb of Jerusalem in the area of Mate Binyamin, the tribe of Benjamin. And that's where Jeremiah and his family lived. So they called him the Antoti, the man from Anatot. Hechelu levazos. They mocked it. Na'u anamim luchamu l'havzos. The people, the anamim, meaning the Egyptians, came and battled against us. I'm skipping. Penei, the pay. Penei kirav karev. The battle happened. V'lo also lo shi'iya. There was no healing. There was no salvation for Josiah and the Jewish soldiers. Vayoru hayorim lamelech Yoshiyahu. Not only did they slaughter, the Egyptian army slaughtered many of the Jewish soldiers, but they seized the king who led the troops in battle. And they set him up as a bullseye. They were going to make a mockery out of him for target practice. And they were shooting arrows into his body. Odenu otse meinav. before his eyes closed, meaning before he died. Chitz achar chitz morim velochatzim. Arrow after piercing arrow did the marksman shoot into his body. Tzadum v'samuhu kematara l'chitzim. As we said, they seized him. They caught him, they trapped him, and they put him up as a bullseye for the archers. V'yizriku bo shlosh me'os chitzim. And they threw, they sent into his body 300 arrows. Kalim tzatzitzu acharav. The swift, meaning they allowed certain Jews when he was dying to come and hear his last breath. Ezon motzafihu. Vad mitzui nefesh ma'asav hefihu. Ruach sefasav hifsa mipihu. Very often, think about when you're famished, like at the end of a fast day. You have a hard time projecting because you're famished and all that comes out of your mouth is almost air. It's like, it sounds like you're whispering. He had been so wounded from these arrows that all that could come out was ruach sefasav, like his breath came out. That's all that came out. And what were the last words that he whispered as he tried to speak to those who had come to him as he was dying? Tzadik hu adoshem ki marisi fihu. God is truly righteous. It is, I have rebelled against his command, against his words or his speech I have rebelled. The very last thing he did was tziduk adin. He acknowledged the fact. He acknowledged the fact that he brought about the death of all these soldiers, and he brought about his own death because he didn't listen to the word of God that was communicated him to him by Jeremiah the prophet. He realized that he only had he listened. You know, it's always after the fact. Boy, I should have listened. Boy, I should have listened. And after the fact, he realized that he's rebelled against God. And that has brought about his downfall and the downfall of so many young Jewish boys. But what he didn't realize is ultimately his death. He was the great hope, as we said previously, the great hope that could have turned around the society. It would have needed another generation or two generations, but he was the change agent. And with his death, no one assumed he would die that young. There was no succession plan as to who would replace him. And tragically, the man that replaced him, Jehoiakim, was a terrible, terrible king. He was just a corrupt king. He did terrible things. He reverted back to the ways of the Jews under Menashe and Amon. Yeah, just to give you an example, Jeremiah was incarcerated because they couldn't kill him because Jeremiah was too popular. He was too well respected. But they hated his guts and they tried to shut him up. So how do you shut this guy up? You incarcerate him, right? Instead of dealing with the message that he's communicating, you try to suppress the message. So he sent via one of his visitors as he was incarcerated in the Chatzer HaMatara. That visitor was his great student, his great disciple, Baruch ben Neriah. He sent a scroll, and that scroll, Chazal, the rabbis say, were the first three, the first, the second, and the fourth chapter of Eicha. It was meant to be a wake-up call to Jehoiakim. And what does he do? He can't take it. He's reading it, and it's so infuriating, and it's so offensive to him, that he burns the message. Before finishing reading the scroll, he literally burns the scroll. Well, later on, after the Churban, Yoshiyahu was assassinated 22 years before the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. And we'll see that 22 years is not just a chance number. There's a rhyme and reason to 22. But Jehoiakim literally burnt the scroll. So after the Churban, Yirmiyahu comes out of prison, he rewrites those chapters, and he adds two chapters. Chapter 3, Ani HaGever, which is what? That is the eyewitness account of the tragedy of the downfall, the destruction of the Jewish people. See, the Eicha, which the three chapters of Eicha, 1, 2, and 4, that initially was like a prophecy. It was a vision as to what would be. When it was rewritten the second time, it's a retrospect on what happened. So he adds chapter 3 and chapter 5. Chapter 4, which is part of the initial Eicha, is Eicha Yuam Zahav. How has the gold which radiates become blackened, become sullied? How is this? How could this be? How could this happen? And what is Eicha Yuam Zahav? It was a eulogy that was said at the cemetery, at the burial of Yoshiyahu HaMelech, King Josiah. Very, very tragic. Because as we said, with his downfall and his demise, really was the demise of the Jewish people. And because the Jews came out and they mourned and they appreciated what they had lost. You know, there's a phrase that we use, Acharei mos kedoshim emor. After someone dies, we say how holy that person is. Those are the three parshios we read after Pesach. Acharei mos kedoshim emor. Well, all the cynics who couldn't stand Yoshiyahu, and all those who mocked him and were so fed up with his changes, you know, turning this into actually a moral society, turning this into a religious country, those very cynics, they appreciated what they had. They appreciated what it means to have a sincere executive, a sincere leader who really is out there for the benefit of the people, not to aggrandize his own ego. They only appreciated that after the fact, okay? And even they mourned. The nation mourned his death. We're going to pick it up with the phrase, Vayekonen alav kol eicha yuham zav. There's a big block of about 8 lines. It's the 4th line in that block. And Jeremiah lamented him, mourned him. What was the eulogy? Kol eicha yuham zav. Tam b'mikre echad kos Megiddo lishtos. Unfortunately, he drank the bitter cup of Megiddo. And that was the end of his life. When was it? B'moed shnas hashmitah kega hakel le'esos. It was the summer before, it was the summer of, I apologize, the Shemitah year. What happens after the Shemitah year? The Shemitah year ends, you know, it's Rosh Hashanah of the next year. But that Sukkot, 15 days later, is Sukkos. And when they made Havdalah, they erected a platform in the Beis HaMikdash where the Melech would get up and read very important, significant sections of Sefer Devarim, like Shema, like the part from Veschanan that deals with Mamad Har Sinai, reading of the Ten Commandments, the Covenant, the Brachos and the Klalos. All of this is done because these are essential philosophical principles that the Jews lead their life by. Once every cycle, you know, we have a 7-year cycle. So now that we're ending the Shemitah year and we're going back to work, those in agriculture going back to work, that year everyone would come to the Beis HaMikdash for Sukkos. You know, in general, when the Beis HaMikdash is functioning properly, there's a huge crowd that comes for Pesach because you have to bring a Korban Pesach. A male that doesn't partake in the Korban Pesach is chayav kares. So a lot of people would come for Pesach. Not so many would come for Shavuos because it's 7 weeks later. It's a long trip back. So that was the least that would come, even though there's a mitzvah to come. But then in between Shavuos and Pesach was the holiday of Sukkos. You know, Sukkos was challenging because it was a time of the ingathering. It was harvest time. So a lot of people were busy. They didn't know if they could make the trip to Yerushalayim. But one Sukkos they all came was a Sukkos after Shemitah. First of all, you don't have the ingathering because there's no harvest. Secondly, That's the big Sukkot, because once every 7 years, the Melech is going to get up after we make Havdalah, after the first day of Sukkot, and he's going to do the mitzvah called Hakel. Hakel, of course, is the mitzvah that you read at the very end of the Torah. The last two mitzvahs are writing a Sefer Torah and Hakel. And what does it say? Anashim, Nashim V'tav. The men, the women, the children, everybody came. And the Gemara in Chagiga asked the question, why does God command that we have to bring the kids? Why do you have to bring the kids? Because you know why? You want them to always have that indelible impression of that experience. If you're a little kid that came from a farm in the Galilee, or you're a little kid that comes from a fishing village on the Kinneret, or you're a little kid that comes from a little town down in the Negev, and then this mass and mass of people, you're celebrating the holiday, but it's not just that you're celebrating the holiday. That you can do in your apartment in Yerushalayim or your hotel room. Everybody, the whole Jewish world shows up that night. You usually have to go to bed. It's past your bedtime. But mommy and daddy are letting you stay up late tonight. It's like Seder night. They're letting you stay up late tonight. And you're coming to this incredible event there on the Temple Mount, on Har HaBayis. And there's this big platform. And who's that man up on the platform? It's the Melech. It's our leader. And he's teaching Torah. And he's teaching essential principles of Torah. Wow. It blows you away. I remember, I was a little kid, you know, we grew up in a small farm town. We're in the cattle business. We have dairy farms and we sell livestock. A little town 50 miles outside of Buffalo called Lindenville. And my mother and father allowed me and my little brother to go with my grandmother to visit our great uncle who lived in Long Island, West Hempstead, Long Island, Arthur Hyman. And we went there and it was winter break. You know, I was, I think, second grade. My brother was in kindergarten. And they took us in to the city for the lighting of the Hanukkah menorah in Rockefeller Center. Well, we thought West Hempstead was a metropolis. And we see all of these people, thousands of people. There were more people in one little area, one square block, than in my whole little town growing up. It was wild. And you got all these people. And we looking up at these massive buildings, we never saw buildings so tall in our life. It was something I could never, ever forget. The image I have of that first time going to New York City to Rockefeller Center, a little farm boy, a little kid from a small farming village. That's the image that these kids have. It's not because they're going to understand the Torah that the king is reading or teaching them. The adults will understand. But it's the experience. It's the awesome experience of being part of a nation, part of a nation that's committed to Judaism and to the Torah values, as is demonstrated by the mitzvah of Hakel, that Motzei, first day of Yom Tov of Sukkot. And that, instead of the whole world coming together to learn Torah from Yoshiyahu HaMelech, because he would have done that in a few months, but it didn't happen. He died. He was killed at the Megiddo Junction. So instead, the whole world came together for his funeral, not to learn Torah from him on Sukkot, but for his funeral that summer. And the verse says, Tala Esrim Ushtayim, because Yirmiyahu did such an incredible job evoking a sense of deprivation and loss, what we had lost with the death of Yoshiyahu. And he used every word of the alphabet, 22. I want to go back to the words, the number 22. From Aleph to Tav, there are 22 letters. What was Jeremiah doing? He's saying that this loss you can't articulate. You can't express. You can go from A to Z, from Aleph to Tav, to try to express it, but you can't. That is the devastation. That is the loss. And because of that, God suspended the Churban Beis HaMikdash for 22 years. Why 22 years? For the tears, for the introspection, for the catharsis that happened during each and every line of this eulogy. And that's the tragic story. And unfortunately, you can, at this point, Rebbetzin Steinig, you can take down the kina, if you like. Unfortunately and tragically, because of this, you know, there was a churban. Do you see what one person can accomplish? You see what one person can do? The impact one Jew can have? And this is literally an example of that. It's the classic example of what one person did, accomplished, was in the process of accomplishing, could have accomplished, but tragically was snuffed out. But tragically, we lost him. And the consequences of him not being able to accomplish what he was in the process of doing. The impact was so horrific. The impact was ultimately the Churban Beis HaMikdash, the destruction of Jerusalem, of Judea, and of our nation. And that is the power of one Jew. And what we do throughout the Tisha B'Av Kinos, we take a step back and we don't speak about the macro, but we speak about the life of this woman, of this man, of this daughter, of this son. And we go into their life and what they meant to us and what we lost by not having them. That is the story of Josiah. And that expresses to us why it is that the diary of Anne Frank has had such an impact on the world. That the story of one Jew, as portrayed by Steven Spielberg in Schindler's List, had such an impact on the world. It's the ability of one person and their story and our ability to relate to one person. That's the story of Yoshiyahu HaMelech, King Josiah, the one man who could have prevented the Churban. I want to thank Rebbetzin Judy Steinig, and I want to thank the community engagement department of the OU for the incredible work and job they've done throughout this COVID experience. And I hope there is not a Tisha B'Av, but if there is, I hope look forward to sharing with you 3 weeks from today, spending the day with you together as we delve into the events of Jewish history and the great men and women of Jewish history that we lost and their impact. Thank you.
Rabbi Weil, we thank you so much for spending your Shabbat Shabbatamas with us on not an easy day, we know, for anybody. And we thank you so much for all of your insights. And I just want to remind everybody that we'll be hearing from Rabbi Weil again on Tuesday. This coming Tuesday, so make sure you register for that before we get to Tisha B'Av. Just a few housekeeping comments. Last week, we spoke about a new initiative called Perfect Pair. Rabbi Howard had given a session on legacy, and this is a situation in which each one of us can share our experiences, our values, and legacy with a teen in a virtual setting. Sign up comes in any of the emails that I send to you. But I just want to tell you that normally we always are concerned, are we getting the teenagers to do enough? In this case, we have right now scheduled for this program many more teenagers than we have adults. And we need many more adults to please sign up. The teens really need you. It's not going to be, and it's not right now, an easy summer for them. It's not the summer that they were envisioning. It's not the summer that we want for any of them. But many of them are looking forward to hearing about our lives. So we would ask that you sign up and you'll see all of the instructions there. As I said before, all of our programs are recorded. You don't have to ask me for the recording because you're going to get it hopefully later today or tomorrow. And in this case, I'm going to also put in the keynote, so you'll have that to look at while you're listening to it. But it goes to those who register. So you don't ever have to ask me for it. You're going to get it. Just check the emails that I send to you. Again, we want to thank all of our partnering synagogues throughout the country who are helping us to spread the word about this program. Please speak to your rabbi or president if your synagogue hasn't been listed, and we'll be very happy to add them to the list. As I said, next week, we're going to hear from Rabbi Weil again in another session on Tuesday, but you have to register for it again. That's the way it works with Zoom. So again, thank you so much. Have a meaningful Tinus. Have a good Shabbos. Be safe and healthy. Thank you again.